You're traveling through another podcast. A podcast not only of reviewing and discussing, but of discovery. A journey into a wondrous show whose boundaries are that of imagination. That's the RSS feed up ahead. Your next stop, Anthology.
Hello and welcome to Anthology, presented by ObsessiveViewer.com. I'm your host, Matt Hurt, and if this is your first time listening, Anthology is one man's examination of the Twilight Zone as a first-time viewer. Each podcast, I share my first impressions, analysis, and overall thoughts on Rod Serling's iconic series, one episode at a time. I also cover modern anthology science fiction shows, such as Black Mirror and the currently airing Twilight Zone reboot on CBS All Access in bonus episode review series. You can find more of Anthology as well as a full episode archive at anthologypod.com. And if you want to contact me, you can use the Facebook page at facebook.com/anthologypod. Tweet me at OVAnthologyPod or send an email to matt@obsessiveviewer.com. And of course, thank you to Tony Troxell at Geeking in Indiana for so graciously helping me with the opening narration theme music for this podcast. You can find him at Indiana Geeking on Twitter and at geekinginindiana.com. So today on the podcast, I'll be discussing Static. It's the 20th episode of the Twilight Zone's second season, and it originally aired on March 10th, 1961. And I'll be rounding out the episode with a brief review of Science Fiction Theater's Season 1, Episode 2, Time is Just a Place. So that's what we've got planned here for this episode. Before I get into that, I do have some housekeeping to attend to. First up, it's been a few weeks since I've put out an episode of the podcast, which is, not irregular for me, but it's also, really not good considering that, we're in the middle of the Twilight Zone reboot. So I need to kind of step up and get caught up in everything. So just want to address that. Sorry that I took a little, three weeks off, I think, from doing it. It's a labor of love, and it's just once, I don't know if I get burnout on it or anything, it's really hard to get back into the swing of things. So anyway, I'm back. So I hope you guys don't mind me taking that, little siesta from the podcast, I guess. Let's see. And then, so much stuff has happened. So I'm recording this, Wednesday, May 15th. This morning I woke up and found that there was a, trailer for Black Mirror season 5, was like released this morning. So that is coming very soon. Here in just a few weeks, we're going to have a brand new season of Black Mirror. Of course, I'm going to be reviewing the episodes here on Anthology. Those episodes drop June 5th, and it's just going to be three episodes this go around, so that should be pretty easy for me. I think I'm actually going to take the day off from work the day that they're released and just spend the day just Black Mirroring. So I'm excited about that. Couple things about the Twilight Zone reboot, or the remake, or what have you, the Jordan Peele Twilight Zone show on CBS All Access. In the time since I last recorded, it has been renewed for a season 2, which is no surprise. And also on May 30th, on CBS All Access, they're going to have all of the episodes in black and white, which I thought was interesting. And I don't know if that means they're going to replace all the episodes with black and white versions, or they're going to have alternate versions in the app for black and white and color, but it'll be really interesting to see. And yeah, I'm hoping to get caught up on my reviews on that here soon, so that we can have Tiny on from The Obsessive Viewer to review the season as a whole with me. And other things that have come up that I am forgetting, I'm sure that there's a bunch of stuff that I'm forgetting, but I can't think of anything else. But oh, another big one. Friend of the show's, Robert, from Utah, he went and reviewed all three of Obsessive Viewer Robert.com's podcast on iTunes. And I just wanted to give him a quick shout out. Thank you so much, Robert. I really appreciate it. And I'm going to go ahead and read his review for Anthology here. So, okay. Robert said, I love it. First of all, it's a 5-star review. So thank you so much, Robert. I really appreciate it. He said, awesome podcast. I love Black Mirror. And a couple years ago, I searched for Black Mirror podcasts. This one caught my eye and I haven't looked back. I'll always be grateful for this podcast because that's how I came in contact with the podcaster, Matt Hurt. He's a great guy with movie and TV tastes similar to me. I love the interactions with Matt. And even though I don't watch every episode of The Twilight Zone, I still enjoy listening to Matt's reviews on them. Really enjoying watching the reboot of The Twilight Zone and Matt's take on them. His reviews on Black Mirror are top-notch, and I love hearing bonus reviews, especially the ones I get to pick. So thank you so much, Robert. I really appreciate that. Once again, that's super nice, and I really appreciate you taking the time to leave a review. And anyone else listening, feel free to do the same. I don't check iTunes that often, just because I don't know. I just feel a little anxious about it, that like, oh, what if I see a bad review, because I've gotten bad reviews in the past and they're not pretty. But I definitely appreciate when I get, you know, positive reviews. And of course it helps the podcast in the long run because it helps increase visibility and all that. And I don't know, it's good to have. So if you have iTunes, feel free to leave a rating and review. And I hope that it's nice. And I hope that there are positive ratings and reviews. So I think that's all the housekeeping I have to handle today. I'm sure I'm going to be reiterating a lot of that same stuff on my bonus review when I finally get around to reviewing the Wunderkind episode of The Twilight Zone, which, spoiler for that bonus review, man, and for this review, like, this, I kind of peeked behind the curtain. Like, there are several reasons why I kind of just took a few weeks off as an impromptu hiatus, but a big part of that is that the next two episodes of this podcast that I had to review, this review of Static and a review of the Wunderkind, both are episodes I just didn't really care for. So I think subconsciously I've been putting off like having to review these episodes because both episodes were kind of just episodes that just didn't really connect with that much. But I'm excited to talk about them now, and and I'm gonna go ahead and do that. So I got my book here. So before I get into the talent rundown and everything, I'm gonna go ahead and read a plot summary of Static, courtesy of Unlocking the Door to a Television Classic by Martin Grahams Jr. Here, of course, is the time where if you are avoiding spoilers for Static or what have you, I'm about to spoil all of this episode of The Twilight Zone, so please, if you're concerned about spoilers, turn this off right now and go watch Static. It's available anywhere you find streaming media. It's on all the streaming services, so go check that out and then come back and listen to the review. But consider yourself warned. I'm going to be spoiling Static, and here is the plot summary courtesy of Martin Grahams Jr. in Twilight Zone: Unlocking the Door to a Television Classic. Ed Lindsay, one of the tenants of Vinny's boarding house, longs for the days when radio was a medium of entertainment. He tires of watching everyone else stay fixated on the television programs that insult his intelligence. Digging out the old radio from the basement, Vinny carries the unit up to his room. No, that's wrong. Ed Lindsay carries the unit up to his room and plugs it in. He soon discovers that broadcasts of the past are coming through the speakers. Every time he tries to get someone else to listen with him, however, all that comes through the speakers is static. Vinny, his old flame, believes Ed is getting sentimental for the past, during their romantic days. But 20 years later, they apparently missed their chance. Avoiding the rest of the tenants, Ed retires every day to the radio to listen to Let's Pretend and Kay Kaiser, but is heartbroken when he returns from the grocery store one afternoon to find the radio had been sold to a junk dealer. Ed sets out to find the radio and buy it back. He succeeds, and returning the radio to his bedroom and turning it on, finds himself transported back to 1940, where he is 20 years younger, and so is Vinny. Okay, so this episode stars Dean Jagger as Ed Lindsay. This was his only episode of The Twilight Zone. However, he did appear in Rod Serling's episode, one of Rod Serling's Playhouse 90 shows called The Dark Side of the Earth, which also happened to feature Earl Holloman of Where Is Everybody fame. And co-starring as Vinny is Carmen Matthews. This was her only Twilight Zone episode as well. And as Professor Ackerman is Robert Earnhardt or Emhart. Oh God, I'm so out of practice here, guys. It's hard to read that. Okay, Robert Emhart plays Professor Ackerman, and this was his only Twilight Zone episode as well. He did appear in one episode of Serling's other series, The Loner, titled A Little Stroll to the End of the Line, and one episode of Bob Hope Presents the Chrysler Theater, titled A Killing at Sundial, which was written by Rod Serling. And a little piece of trivia is he was actually born in Indianapolis, and that's, you know, of interest to really no one but me because I live in Indianapolis. I thought that was mildly interesting. Charles Beaumont wrote the script based on a story by O.C. Rich, and director for this episode was Buzz Kulik. This was his third of 9 Twilight Zone episodes. We last saw his work this season and late last season, I think. The Trouble with Templeton and King Nine Will Not Return. And next up is very soon we're going to see his work on 100 Yards Over the Rim and The Mind and the Matter. So I'm going to go into my review. So before I actually get into my actual review, what I knew before this episode was really nothing. From what I've picked up here and there, I knew that it had something to do with radios and radio waves and frequencies, and I kind of wondered if it would be like that movie Frequency, where Jim Caviezel uses like a ham radio to talk to his dead dad in the past, played by, Dennis Quaid. But I was wrong. So I'll dive into my full review here now. So the first thing I noticed really upfront, as I'm sure everyone will be surprised to hear this, is that I noticed that this was one of the videotaped episodes. And in my notes I have, I was wondering if this was the last of the videotaped episodes because, I think it ends up being that this is the fifth one, I believe, and we have one more coming up in a couple weeks. But this one is one of the first times where I just kind of felt like, okay, I'm kind of over this whole videotape thing. The video quality does not look good at all, and it's just I want it to look better, and it's starting to get to me. So I'm glad we're almost done with it, and I can't wait for us to get back to the filmed episodes. But something interesting that I kind of didn't really consider when watching the other videotaped episodes is I'm here now in 2019 watching these episodes on a 46 inch HD TV. And I find the taped quality of it really distracting and not up to par. But I kind of wonder, it's interesting to think that I'm sure that the videotaped episodes looked better when they originally aired, just because of technology, like watching it over the air on television, without, you know, HD picture and everything. I've got to assume that seeing these episodes as they aired was not a big bother, which I kind of think is maybe a little interesting, because there must have been somewhat of a bother because they decided not to do it anymore. But, I just thought that was interesting, that I kind of wonder if part of my, I wouldn't even say distaste, just my, well, I guess distaste of the videotaped episodes is just due to the fact that I'm watching it in the future with an HD setup and everything. So I can really see the issues. And I kind of wonder how it would have felt if I were in 1961 watching this episode live, and then this is the cue for the Twilight Zone to transport me back then, as I live out my own Twilight Zone episode. So anyway, we're watching a group of older people watching a Western on TV, and there are a couple men playing checkers. That's Ed Lindsay and the professor, and it's clear that this is a boarding house, and people are just, you know, enjoying their days in in a lethargic manner. So Ed Lindsay is introduced to us as kind of a curmudgeon of an old man, and he gets kind of angry at the way that everyone is so obsessed and possessed by the television. He gets up and starts channel surfing and everything, and he's kind of espousing how he thinks that it's hypnotic and turning people's brains to mush, and how everyone's just living for the television and everything. And it's demonstrating that he's a character that lives in the past, and he hasn't grown necessarily with technology or anything. And I kind of like this hatred of television that he has. It kind of says a lot about his character. And like these days, it's easy to say like, okay, well, that's, you know, it's kind of a tried and true character trait of like an older person kind of crapping on current technology in a sense, like saying like, oh, that, you know, television will rot your brain, you should go and listen to the radio, or, you know, that YouTube is ruining your attention span, why don't you watch TV? But it's still kind of a tried and true kind of thing, and this episode sells it really well too, because everyone that's watching TV, like, they have this just blank expression on their face, and like the professor in particular just looks vacant, and that it just kind of sells, like, it's what separates Ed Lindsay's introduction from being just a curmudgeon of an old man to being the one person who can kind of, who has a rational reason for not liking television, because it shows that, like, yeah, everyone's just blank and ineffectual or unresponsive to his outbursts and everything. So it's an interesting line that the episode straddles there. So kind of fed up with television and everything, Ed Lindsay goes into the basement and starts rummaging through his belongings there, and he finds a radio. So and also a kid off the street asks what the radio is, which is kind of funny because Ed Lindsay's just like, it's a radio. Haven't you ever seen a radio? And I also noticed when he's looking through the stuff to get the radio, he stops and looks at a picture of himself and Vinny, and he smiles when he's uncovering the radio and sees the picture. I thought that was a nice touch there, and kind of I don't know if I'd say foreshadows, but kind of hints at what's to come.
That's a radio, boy.
What's it do?
Don't you know what a radio is, boy?
Well, sure, but I've never seen one like that before.
No one ever saw one quite like that. Because that's a very special sort of radio. In its day, circa 1935, its type was one of the most elegant consoles on the market. Now, with its fabric-covered speakers, its peculiar yellow dial, its serrated knobs, it looks quaint and a little strange. Mr. Ed Lindsay is going to find out how strange very soon when he tunes into the Twilight Zone.
So, the opening narration, Serling talks about how the radio is strange and everything. And if I can just briefly cut away from my review of this episode, like, this also kind of demonstrates, and I'll talk about this in my review of the Wunderkind, but it demonstrates one of the flaws I find in the new Twilight Zone series is that, like, I think I mentioned in my review of A Traveler, from the new series, that none of the narrations seem to focus on the actual device or Twilight Zone setup or what have you. So, when, like, in this episode, Serling is talking almost specifically or almost directly just about the radio itself. And that's something that I feel is missing from the new series, is that the narrations are talking about the people instead of the circumstances or the devices. Like, in as much as I loved the episode Replay, like, he doesn't talk about the, you know, camcorder or anything. It's just like, oh, meet this character. So anyway, that's just something minor that I think is missing from the new series. Check out my reviews of the new series. But anyway, so Ed Lindsay's taking the radio upstairs, and he mentions, like, Vinny stops him, and she's like, well, what are you doing? And he says that he never throws anything away that's worth keeping. And I kind of wonder if that was intended to be, like, a slight, like, passive-aggressive kind of jab at Vinny, because she and him used to be an item and they could have been really happy together, but they kind of threw away that relationship. And I kind of wonder if that's just this subtle kind of like dig at their relationship, in which case that's just a really crappy thing to say and really, really pretty harsh. So they take it upstairs. He's fiddling with the, radio. It's a massive, like, piece of machinery. It's a good, I like it as a prop. Like, even though we don't really see that much of it, or like that, we don't see a lot of detail of it. It's not like a prop in the stature of like the Mystic Seer or the one-armed bandit in way back in the Fever. Like, there's not that much detail at it, because it's kind of the majority of the episode seems to be shot kind of from an angle to where it's not like the radio is actually like front and center or anything. But I like the, I don't know. I like his interactions with it. Like, I enjoy the way that Dean Jagger kind of is clearly like in love with it. He has like a very physical kind of performance with it, because he's like clearly like enamored with it. And it's like, as he says later on, it's kind of the thing that brings him happiness and everything. And Dean Jagger really sells that well with his performance, as he's just kind of fiddling with it and everything. Just like little innocuous things, like trying to find the right frequency and everything. And just the way that he talks with such admiration for it. It was for an episode that I didn't really care that much for, Dean Jagger really sold the character's admiration for it. But anyway, we don't, as far as like a prop, I like it, because it's massive. It's about the size of like a jukebox, and I just old timey radios. That's really aesthetically really kind of attractive, I guess, even though we don't really see it up front too much. So he and the kid are looking at the radio, and the kid does this really goofy dance that's just so, it's almost, I don't know, it's almost over the top, but it really plays well into Dean Jagger's kind of performance, as like he makes like Ed Lindsay's kind of annoyed by him, and you can kind of see like a little bit of that curmudgeonly character come out when he like gives the kid some money and he says, go buy yourself a switchblade, which kind of feels like indicative of him just having a low opinion of everyone. And you could also, I think there was like a commentary track on the DVD that mentioned that, that air may have been, yeah, I think it was actually on the DVD. I think there's an interview with Buzz Kulik from, Mark Zuckery interviewed him, but I think he referenced that line and said something to the effect of, just that's what he thinks kids play with, is just go get switchblades and stuff and be violent instead of, you know, being a kid. I don't know. That could be a stretch, but yeah. So as Ed Lindsay is, fiddling with the radio, the sounds of the static as he's kind of going through the frequencies and stuff, kind of reminded me of the sound effects from The Invaders. I don't know if that's like if it's taken directly from it, or it just sounds similar to it, but I thought that was interesting. So we're shown like Ed Lindsay, this is the start of him being really nostalgic for the past. Also just real quick, Ed Lindsay, I don't know what it is about that name. Like, it's a good name. But for some reason I feel compelled to say the full name instead of just like Ed or Mr. Lindsay or anything. It's just Ed Lindsay. It rolls off the tongue really well. Anyway, so at this point where it's clear that he's nostalgic for the past, and I started to kind of wonder, like, is this meant to be saying that he's trying to shield himself from his mistakes and like he's escaping into this radio? Or is he a person who won't confront his mistakes that he's made in his life, and he won't take responsibility, which is pretty much what the case is. Which is an interesting character, interesting characterization for a character in the series, because that's, I wouldn't say a universal thing, but it's something that a lot of people, I'm sure, can relate to. Just that bitterness of not doing what's best for you, or making kind of living with those mistakes that you make in life that have changed the trajectory of your life as your life itself, in living with those choices, even if it makes you miserable. Like, that's something that I feel is a really powerful sentiment. But I'll get into that in a bit. So after that, we get a dinner scene with Lindsay at the table, kind of humming the music from the radio. And it's very clear, like, everyone that's having dinner and everything in the boarding house, like, it's clear that he just doesn't really fit in with that group, I don't think. He talks about how he listened to a song called "I'm Getting Sentimental Over You," and another song on the radio as well. And I thought that this was interesting, just as someone living in 2019 watching this, because they actually reference, like, they're kind of, they're talking about how, like, oh no, that's not possible because, the person who sang that song is dead. And it's just, it was really interesting to me as someone in 2019 to listen to, or to see them talk about music of the past being, in a time where recordings didn't exist. So, like, they had said, like, okay, well, you know, that person's dead, and back then there were no recordings or anything, so there's no way you could have heard that song. I just thought that was really interesting, and I liked it. And so at this point I was like, okay, I think the radio is a gateway to the past, or the music, or it's playing music from the past to kind of bring him into that world, or to make him travel through time in a sense. And then it became clear, like, it's only playing the music for him, and it won't play when other people are around. It'll just be static, appropriately enough. It comes down to him being a curmudgeon, but when he's talking about the music, I really like Dean Jagger's performance here, because when he's talking about the music from the past, he's happy. Like, he's genuinely happy to live in the past. And it's just something that, it's not even like a seduction thing. Like, he's not being seduced into anything necessarily nefarious or malicious or anything. It's just that he is in love with the past and a time where he had his life ahead of him and everything. So we get some hijinks, I guess would be the case. He tries to play the music on a little tiny portable radio, but it doesn't work. He calls the operator to ask about the radio station that he had listened to, WPDA, and the operator tells him that the station has been out of business for 15 years. And then we get back to him in his room alone, and he is listening to FDR doing, like, one of his fireside chats and everything. And we get an act break, and at this point, I just wasn't too crazy about this episode. It just didn't mesh with me at this point. So anyway, when we come back from the commercial and everything, it's clear, like, he can hear the music. And we get a scene where Ed, Lindsay, and Vinny are talking, and it's clear, like, she has feelings for him, and we get the backstory of them living there. I think that's after the act break. Anyway, they've lived in that boarding house for 20 years, and they had actually met there in 1940. He proposed to her, but his mother was sick. They waited, but by then it was too late. And Vinny tells him, "We had our chance and missed it, Ed." And she explains that "Getting Sentimental Over You" was their song, and they used to listen to the radio together all the time, and she just thinks that he is wanting to be young again. So Ed Lindsay gets agitated and kicks her out, and then recedes back into history with the radio. And I think that that's my issue with the episode as a whole. She calls him out for wanting to be young again, and she's pretty much spot on. Like, the point of this scene isn't to misdirect us or to set up things that will be paid off at the end. It's strictly to deliver us all this backstory and then spell out what will happen at the end, essentially. And it bothered me, because it kind of took the spring out of the kind of surprise at the end. Like, I didn't feel necessarily affected by the ending, because it's just kind of reinforcing everything that Vinny says to Ed Lindsay at this point in the episode, and we're still fairly early in the episode, so that I thought that that was kind of a little clunky. But even though all that's a storytelling issue, and like, even though I wasn't too crazy about it, I still really loved the kind of message at the end and found it to be pretty profound. So, to kind of go back to what Vinny was saying to Ed, though, she told him, "You loved me, and now you love what we were, what we could have been." And she tells him that he gets upset the same time every year because it would have been their anniversary. And I thought that was really interesting because she's like, she's aware of his mental state and everything. It's like, it's not, and that's what, it kind of goes back to me talking about how like the radio isn't nefarious or anything, or isn't a malicious entity or anything. It's just his psyche, his memory, his romanticizing of the of a simpler time where he was in love and had his future ahead of him. That's what's kind of propelling him on this journey through the Twilight Zone. We get another scene break, and we get to see Ed. And this is where the episode kind of, I wouldn't say falls apart for me, but this is where I have my kind of a bigger issue with the episode, is that we see Ed Lindsay coming into the boarding house from the outside, obviously, and he's got a bunch of groceries. He's actually smiling. He's happy. He's still kind of a douchebag about the TV, but he's kind of more upbeat and everything. So he goes upstairs and he finds that the radio is gone. And we learn that Vinny and the professor gave it to a junk dealer. And I don't know, at that point, I don't buy that. I just think the episode didn't really sell it that hard. Like, it's clear that, that Vinny, and the professor are like got rid of the radio for Ed's own good, I suppose. But honestly, it's kind of a crappy thing to do. It's like, at that point, I don't think they really established, they didn't establish Ed Lindsay as having like an obsession with the radio. Instead, they established Vinny and Ed Lindsay's backstory and everything. Like, it's not like Ed was being consumed by this radio yet. And so I feel like Vinny and the professor taking action to just steal his property and give it away, wasn't quite earned in the storytelling. And yeah, it just rubbed me the wrong way. So when he comes back downstairs and he's like, "Hey, what's up? Where's my radio?" Vinny tells him that they sold it to a junk dealer. And he said, like, I thought this was interesting. Ed Lindsay says, I would have known taking away the one thing. And then he stops just short of saying the one thing that brings me happiness, which would have been kind of harsh. And since they could have been happy. And it kind of plays into that line earlier in the episode where he's like, "I never throw anything away that isn't worth keeping, or is worth keeping around," as a kind of subtle jab at Vinny. But yeah, so Ed Lindsay goes to the junk dealer, gets the radio back, and honestly, I just felt like they were padding the script with that part. Like, I really didn't like it. It really slows down the story to a halt, and it doesn't have any dramatic or any type of real momentum at all in it. It's a complete stall in the storyline, and then it just goes back. Like, there's no tension with it. There's no conflict with it or anything. He just goes and gets it back, and then he's back in the room with the radio. I don't know. It just felt really just hollow. It just felt kind of cheap, I guess. So anyway, he gets the radio back, gets it back in his room, and then so he calls Vinny up, and she comes back up, and she hears it, and it's revealed they're actually the younger versions of themselves. They've been transported back, at least he has, and it kind of seals the story as him really being old and full of regret, and he just wanted to recapture the things that he missed with Vinny. And I wouldn't say correct mistakes, but just he wanted to be back in that time. And like that, like honestly, that kind of hits hard. That's a really, that's a really just sobering message at the end of this episode. It's kind of similar to an extent to the 16 millimeter shrine, because like Ed Lindsay is nostalgic, wants to relive his glory days and not face the fact that he's older now and missed his chance at happiness. Whereas in the 16 millimeter shrine, Barbara Trenton wanted to relive her glory days as a young actress and not, you know, not confront her age and everything. But the story in 16 millimeter shrine, for my taste, is better realized than the one in Static, just because it feels like Static made its point about Ed Lindsay fairly early on and then kind of limped toward the ending where that point is just reinforced. Whereas Barbara Trenton had a lot more nuance to her journey through her episode. And even though I didn't care for the episode at a storytelling level, I really do appreciate the moral and message that it's conveying. Like, that time slips away, we can't get it back, but purposely blinding ourselves to the present by reliving our past is damaging in its own way. We become bitter and angry at the hand life has dealt us, or and the way we've played those cards as they've been dealt to us. So it's a strong message and I appreciate it, but I just wish the story was as strong as the themes and the message of the episode. And I really liked Dean Jagger's performance as well. He played that role really well, but the episode just didn't really work for me that much.
Around and around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows. All Ed Lindsay knows is that he desperately wanted a second chance, and he finally through a strange and wonderful time machine called a radio in the Twilight Zone.
So yeah, that's my review of Static. I don't have much trivia except that it features a clip from an episode of The Fred Allen Show, which was Fred Allen was a popular comedian, and this was also Bob Crane's first television appearance. He was on the radio. So that's I kind of limped through my review of Static, but honestly I just didn't really care that much about this episode, to be honest. It was just okay, but hopefully we get better episodes in this last run of episodes through season two, I should say. So to kind of round out this episode of Anthology, I'm going to do another quick brief bonus review of an episode of Science Fiction Theater. This week I'm talking about Science Fiction Theater, Season 1, Episode 2, Time is Just a Place. It originally aired on April 16th, 1955, and it is available in its entirety on YouTube. I will put a link in the show notes of this episode. Quick plot description of Time is Just a Place is a young couple discovers that their neighbors, who possess a sonic broom and many other technologically advanced household items, are fugitives from the future who have fled to the past to escape an oppressive government. Adapted from Jack Finney's short story, Such Interesting Neighbors. And I believe Such Interesting Neighbors was also adapted into an episode of, oh, wow, I don't have it in my notes, but the Steven Spielberg anthology show. Wow, why can't I think of the name of that show? Amazing Stories, there you go, which is actually being rebooted, remade, what have you, on Apple TV or whatever the streaming service on Apple is going to be or whatever. But anyway, this episode was cool. It was kind of neat. The big takeaway of it is, as the plot description alluded to, the neighbors have a sonic broom, which is in the episode. I found this really, really interesting. The episode shows the sonic broom, and it's essentially a freaking Roomba. And I thought that was really cool to see that this science fiction show kind of predicted or predated or whatever the Roomba thing. So I just thought that was pretty interesting and everything. The kind of story is from the perspective of the main character is the neighbor, who's realizing that his neighbors are kind of eccentric and aren't who they seem to be. And I liked it as far as kind of leading us into this mystery of who these neighbors are, what they could be. And there's a lot of kind of cool philosophy about time travel and about escaping, like, you know, horrifying regimes and everything. It's an interesting story. It's entertaining. And some of the technology that's depicted is pretty cool. Like there's a flashlight that's an X-ray or something. Yeah, it's been a little while since I've seen it, but it was good. It was solid. You can check that out on YouTube. And yeah, let me know what you think. Honestly, let me know what you guys think about these bonus reviews, because I know I'm really brief with them and everything, but it's also not what you guys are listening for, so I don't want to spend a lot of time dissecting science fiction theater and everything. So let me know what you guys think. So that'll do it for this episode of Anthology. I'm getting back in the swing of things after a brief hiatus, so hopefully you guys enjoyed this episode. I'm probably going to hopefully try to do double duty and really get caught up, because I need to watch and review the new Twilight Zone series, and I need to get that done before Black Mirror comes out. So look forward to me posting a lot of frantic episodes in quick succession in the coming weeks, and hope you guys enjoy it. And next up I'm going to be talking about The Wunderkind, the new series episode with John Cho and Jacob Tremblay. Look forward to that. That's going to be a fun review. And then on the main feed here, I'm going to be reviewing the next episode of The Twilight Zone, The Prime Mover, and which I haven't seen yet, so I'm excited to see what it is and everything. And let's see, The Prime Mover, and what is my bonus review? The title of the science fiction theater episode that I'm going to review next week on the show, or in the next few days, I don't know when it is. Season 1, Episode 3 of Science Fiction Theater, called Out of Nowhere. So, hope you guys enjoyed that, and yeah, I'll chat with you guys soon. Thank you guys so much for listening, and I'll see you next time. And now, here's a clip from a recent episode of Tower Junkies, a podcast exploring the work of Stephen King, from ObsessiveViewer.com.
And you can seriously knock it out. I mean, if you're a hardcore reader, you can knock it out in a day.
Yeah.
A weekend, if you're less so. It's not to say it's short or whatever, but it's just...
Yeah, it's... Like, the paperback is less than 400 pages. It's a quick read. There are parts where I had to stop reading it.
Yeah.
Like, just flat out had to stop reading this damn book. But yeah, let's talk about all that in spoilers and kind of go into a more nuanced discussion about it. So spoilers on...
Anthology is edited and produced by Matt Hurt and presented by ObsessiveViewer.com. For a full archive of our episodes, go to anthologypod.com/archive. You can also like the Facebook page at facebook.com/anthologypod and follow the show on Twitter at @OVAnthologyPod. If you enjoy the show, please take a couple minutes to leave us a rating and a quick review on Apple Podcasts. This is the easiest way to support what we do, and all it costs is a little bit of your time. If you'd like to donate to the podcast, you can make a PayPal donation at anthologypod.com/donate, or support us on Patreon for recurring donations and access to commentary tracks and B-roll audio recorded exclusively for patrons at patreon.com/obsessiveviewer. Every donation goes toward paying the fees to keep the podcast running and is greatly appreciated. Official Anthology merch, including shirts, mugs, phone cases, and more, can be found in the Obsessive Viewers TeePublic store. You can find a link to the store in the show notes of this episode and at anthologypod.com/donate. Or you can simply search for Obsessive Viewer at teepublic.com. For information about the Obsessive Viewers annual live event showcasing short horror films from local filmmakers, check out shocktoberinirvington.com. And for an archive of all our events, as well as news about potential future events, head over to obsessiveviewer.com/live. For more podcast content, you can find our flagship movie and TV review and discussion show, The Obsessive Viewer Podcast, at obsessiveviewer.com, and on Twitter at obsessiveviewer. You can also find Tower Junkies, a podcast where Matt and co-host Tiny share their love of all things Stephen King and his magnum opus, The Dark Tower series, over at TowerJunkiesPod.com and at TowerJunkiesPod on Twitter. And finally, check out The Secular Perspective, Tiny's side project podcast, which tackles current events and life's big questions from the perspective of secular hosts Chad and Amanda at TheSecularPerspective.com. Bumper music for this podcast comes courtesy of As Good As It Gets, which can be found at facebook.com/asgoodasitgetsband. You can also find As Good As It Gets music on Spotify, Google Play, and iTunes. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.